No, but I own all the utilities, so it's actually times 10.
Board Games on 95BFM. Our weekly chat with Waitemata local board head Pippa Coombe.
Yes, indeed, it is time for Board Games. This week we are joined by Vernon Tava of the Waitemata local board. And it's a bit of a little bit of an ambitious crossover with Worry Week this week. Our Worry Week for the week is the theme, optics and politics, so quite a general one. And talking about perception, so I talked to Vernon Tava, who is now in local government, however has been involved in the central government sphere as well, about local board stuff in general, as well as optics and politics, and his thoughts on A, what on earth it is, and B, how it affects things. But yeah, here he is.
To me, well, community has so many meanings, of course, depending on context. So I suppose, given this context, I'd focus on what community means from a council perspective. And as an elected representative, we get all sorts of information and input from, you know, the officers of council. So the bureaucrats who work for council, who are employed often for many, many years. Politicians come and go, but bureaucrats are forever, as they say. And we are often presented with plans and ideas that are pretty well developed, and there's a big push from within the institution to get them through. And we are the essential link between the public, you know, the ratepayers, people who don't pay rates, whatever, doesn't really matter so much, but the general public, you know, the people who we actually have been elected to represent. And we're often the only interface, really, between what is a very large administration of the council or central government or whatever the case may be, depending on what level you represent, and everybody else for whom our whole existence is justified. We're there to serve the people. So often it's down to the elected members, like us on the local board, to actually divine or get a sense of how the public actually feels about whatever proposals are coming through, and even better, and this is what we try to do as much as we can, actually find out what the community want and feed that back into council and try to make that stuff happen. And then there's another factor as well where often, and these have been some of the most satisfying projects I've been part of, is where the community actually comes up with something, you know, itself. Let's say a community garden or a particular thing they want to do in a park. Community libraries, that was one of my favorites from last term. You know, the easiest definition from that perspective is that community is everyone but council. But I think it's something a little more than that. It's when people draw together towards some kind of common objective. And often it's not a single objective, because often there can be quite intense disagreement within the community, but they all want more or less the same thing, which is a better place to live. And often, you know, I've found just to be left to their own devices to do that.
And so kind of building off of that, if local boards are created as community bodies, which some people would suggest that they are, do you think that they can inherently be political bodies as well?
Oh, most definitely. And they often are, because the local boards really come from the old community boards under the previous council. So that's before the, you know, the ancient history of 2010, back when all the seven or so councils in Auckland were amalgamated into one. And in a lot of ways, that has been a good thing, in that taking, for example, Auckland City Council, which had quite a small ratepayer base, so pretty limited income, but had responsibility for all, you know, or most of the regional facilities. So the museum, the art gallery, the town hall, the Aotea Centre, you know, a lot of the cultural stuff that services the whole region was funded by quite a small ratings base. And also what you had was the really significant infrastructure that I think we all know about now. You know, another old political saying is that, of course, everybody else rides buses and trains and uses drains. You know, economists ride infrastructure. But, you know, the city rail link, a lot of the massive upgrades we're seeing to stormwater and sewage, a lot of it's, you know, the unglamorous sort of stuff, but it's stuff that was neglected for most of the 20th century by smaller councils who, A, didn't have the money to fund massive projects, and B, were really generally single-mindedly focused from a political perspective on keeping rates as low as possible. And that was a big driver in a lot of Auckland local body politics. There were some notable exceptions. For instance, out west in the old Waitakere Council, they did some really great environmental stuff. They had a real focus on that. But the closer in you got to the central city, the more local government politics was driven by essentially keeping the rates as low as possible. And often they were quite socially conservative groups as well. So we've really seen some changes there. But what you had, though, was you had community boards, which served kind of the same function, but they had very little money. So what you have now is the local boards, which are a really important sort of interface with the public between a very large and sometimes pretty unresponsive council organisation, who in fairness have massive citywide challenges to deal with, and the councillors, who do their best, but there are 20 of them for the same area that has about 25 central government MPs. So each of those councillors has a gigantic constituency, like well over 100,000 people, and they're focused very much on the regional stuff. So it's really, really important that we don't have this totally regional focus, because what happens is whole areas, whole communities can be ignored, sacrificed, overridden, or their interests can be sacrificed in the interests of the big regional projects. So it's absolutely essential that we have that finer grain sort of government that comes from the local boards.
You've touched on that local boards are essentially actors of direct democracy in terms of passing on community thought. If they are that, should and do personalities matter on a local board level?
Personalities make a massive difference for a couple of reasons. One, of course, is the dynamic, the way the team works. If you've got, you can have people who are very, very passionate about their stuff, but tend to bulldoze their way through the other members of the board. I've found generally the most successful way for things to work is when you actually have a bunch of personalities that are reasonably well able to harmoniously work together. So the personalities make a big difference in the interpersonal dynamics of the board. And I've seen, you can see sometimes really brilliant ideas just don't get through, or have a much harder time getting through if they're not advocated properly. But often, I must say, on my local board, on the Waitemata local board, I think we've found a really good balance where we've got a bunch of people who work well together. And a big part of that, I mean, that's the thing you've got to constantly focus on. And quite a bit of work has been put into, making sure that the members of the board are able to communicate with each other and are able to take account of each other's different approaches, different views of the world. I mean, a thing you often realize if you're trying to bring any insight to working with people is that sometimes, you literally see the world in a different way. You view it through a completely different lens. So it's really important if you're an elected representative, as much as possible, to be able to try to see where other people are coming
from. So talking about kind of perception of how things are, like how the local board are perceived, how whether personalities are kind of prominent in local boards, and how we kind of perceive the community's views. This is kind of a discussion about optics, which is a bit of a buzzword when it comes to discussion of politics and discussion of business as well. The term, of course, is derived from the branch of physics, which involves the behavior and properties of light. However, in this context, it kind of refers to the appearance or perception of politicians, political ideologies, and parties. When someone refers to this idea of optics in a political context, what ideas does this invoke to you?
I actually really dislike the term optics. It seems so kind of pseudoscientific, but
it's most definitely pseudoscientific.
But it is all pervasive, and it's one of those things that just sort of caught on, and lots of people say it now. And it is by no means a marginal concern in politics. You always you do always have to think that however good a proposal before you is, you do really have to think about, A, well, how is this going to look? But it's not as simple or kind of craven as that. You know, it's not just like our self-preservation instinct kicks in and we think, oh, what can we get away with and what can't we? It's more about often, particularly when you're dealing with a more nuanced or complex kind of policy proposal, some things take a lot more explaining than others. Some things you really need to bring the public along with you. A really good example is, and this is a controversy I was involved in, and might be better off just never bringing it up again, but I will because it's such a good example. Speaking of the properties of light, was a local park where we had very strong and credible advice from experienced parks and community safety staff in the council that lighting parks at night is not always a good idea. So when you say that, people assume immediately that, well, this is just a cynical attempt to cut costs. You just don't want to change light bulbs or pay the power bill or whatever, which is, you know, I mean, it's such a tiny amount of the sort of running cost of council. It's not a reason you can take seriously. But when you talk about, look, perhaps for parks that aren't actually, that are a little off the beaten track, that aren't ones that lots of people are walking through, that aren't ones that lots of people can see into, if you're lighting a path, you are actually giving, at night, you're giving an implied warranty that this is a safe place to walk. This is just like the street. And we've had many examples in New Zealand and around the world where there are isolated public reserves that people have walked through and terrible things have happened to them. And those parks were fully lit up. Some of them, you know, lit up as brightly as you could possibly hope, like a sports field. But if no one can hear what's going on, if no one can see what's going on, if no one can actually is able to help that person and is inclined to do so, and there's public around, then you're actually leading someone into a dangerous situation. What happens is you are implying that, well, this is a safe way to go. And if it isn't, then we actually have a responsibility to do something about that. Signs don't work. You know, we can clutter the world up with signs telling people, hey, don't fall off that, don't walk down that path, don't burn yourself on this, whatever. Or we can take active steps to make it pretty clear that that's the way you should walk, not this way. Considering the optics of the situation, though, of course, there was an absolutely outraged reaction to this. There's an almost medieval faith in lighting. That if you put a light somewhere, it makes it safe, which of course is just nonsense. There's no evidence to back that up, and actually there's a great deal of evidence to suggest that you're doing the wrong thing by lighting up a place that isn't the right kind of place, doesn't have the right factors. So that was a hugely controversial thing. I was called every name under the sun regarding that, and there were people who honestly believed that this was just some attempt to save, a dollar a night on light bulbs and power bills, when of course it wasn't. So eventually we worked our way around that situation. But I think that is a good illustration of how, considering how things will be received, how they might look to people, bearing in mind that often people are busy, they're living their own lives, they'll only hear the quick idea or see the headline. Yeah. You know, they don't have the time or the inclination to do as we're paid to do and elected to do, to sit there and read the reams of material that come in our direction. So it's extremely important to understand how things look and I think more importantly and accurately, how things will be perceived at first blush, so that you understand, look, this is something that people will just get and will accept, or this is something where we're really going to have to try to take the community with us.
That's not a ladder, that's an upside down snake.
Board games on 95 BFM.